skyline, hit the mortar blocking glass, and check out the reflections in my eyes. You see, they always used to be there, even when this all was grass, and I sang and danced about a high rise. And you were laughing at my helmet hat, laughing at my torch.
This is Comics Therapy, episode 55. No reviews, just analysis. Up this week, two comics from August 20th, 2014, Secret Avengers number 7, and The Multiversity number 1. As always, we have your nerd confessions, and on the couch, we welcome Eisner-nominated artist and writer, Farrell Dalrymple. Just as a reminder, we never do reviews, but we do talk a lot, so there may be spoilers ahead.
My favorite superhero team is The Authority, created by Warren Ellis and Brian Hitch. They started out as a parody team, but really had some cool, straightforward superhero stories by many creators over the years of their existence. Thanks, Ray.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Aaron nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say seriously. This week, we're talking about teams. However reluctantly they may come together. I've always been fascinated by group dynamics, especially if the members of the group are aware of their own inherent dysfunction. And maybe it's more accurate to say that we're talking about that self-awareness rather than the teams themselves. In all three books today, Secret Avengers and The Multiversity, as well as The Wrenchies, which we discussed with creator Farrell Dalrymple, members of the team in question are not only aware of the precariousness of their partnerships, but also that their entire existence is a construct in a comic book. The ultimate meta team for the multiverse.
In between comic segments, your very own nerd confessions, celebrating what we love and occasionally what we snark about comics. This week, we asked you to tell us your favorite teams, of course. Why wouldn't we? This episode, you can call, Skype, or email your confessions to us. The details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. Remember, catharsis is cool.
Hey, this is Seth Engelhart, and my nerd confession as far as favorite super team in comics. It's actually a team up of a team, one from comics, one from TV. There was a crossover comic that had Star Trek the Original Series and X-Men. Favorite scene? When Beast shows up in the medical bay, startling Nurse Chapel, who says, "Dr. McCoy," and they both turn and go, "What?"
In between shows, you can find me on Twitter, at Andrea Schock, and Aaron, at Aaron Myers. The show account is at Comics Therapy. So, Aaron, before I forget, what is your favorite team in comics?
The original Image Comics Wildcats.
Wow, that's 100% not what I would have guessed.
Why? Who would you have guessed?
I don't know. Something a little bit more classic.
That is classic. The 90s were a long time ago. You're old.
You're older than I am, dear. It's fine.
Barely.
Hey, happy birthday, Aaron Myers.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
It's your birthday week.
Sure. I guess technically still.
Yeah. Dude, your birthday was Tuesday. It's Friday. Same week.
I guess that works.
Aw.
Yeah. I don't know if that would be my favorite. Like, it is my favorite because it's whatever came to mind first whenever I'm asked the question.
That's not the definition of favorite. Favorite isn't the first thing that comes to mind. Favorite is, like, the ultimate best. The thing that you hold most dear.
Isn't that whatever's in your heart?
Yeah, but maybe that's not the first thing that you think of.
Whatever's in my heart comes to mind first.
Okay.
You don't get to tell me what I love.
You're right. You're right.
Yeah, so what's your answer?
The Avengers.
Ugh, so boring.
Yeah, but they were first.
I guess.
What does that mean?
No, it's fine. It's a good answer. It's fine. We can move on.
I wanted to be all proud of myself for getting caught up finally with Avengers and New Avengers this week.
Yeah, I'm proud of you.
Yeah. It's the first time in a really long time that I've been behind. And I was significantly behind with both of them. So I'm all caught up now, and I'm caught up with Avengers World, and I'm caught up with Secret Avengers, and, you know, all of the Avengers. Yep, yep.
Great job.
Hey, come on. It's been, like, what is that? Several months, right?
I guess so. I don't know how far behind you were.
Yeah, like 6 issues behind with New Avengers.
Hmm.
Five issues behind with New Avengers, and like 7 or 8 for Avengers.
I mean, whatever. That's kind of fun to read in a big chunk like that.
Yeah. I made the decision to not go back and forth between them.
Mm.
I read all of Avengers, and then I read all of New Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. Like, I don't think that... I remember talking about this when the parallel stories began, that flipping back and forth between the two, if you got behind with like one or two issues, was mm-hmm. more beneficial. But since I had several to read, I just did it. Just read
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and the story kind of split apart a bit after...
After Infinity.
Right.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to read them together necessarily.
Right.
Good. Well, I'm excited that you got to do that. It's like living it all over again through your eyes.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like kind of a shame that I actually let that slip. So I promise to never let that happen again.
We'll see how that works out.
But no, I think that you discount the fact that like the first team that you connect with is the one that sticks with you. Like, was Wildcats the first one that you really read regularly?
Yeah, I probably that I had all like four of that first mini series and like made sure I got them. I don't know why it, you know, stuck with me, but it did.
So then don't scoff when I say the Avengers are mine.
That's fine. I'm just, you know, I used to read independent comics way back when too.
Wait, is that what this is about?
No, it's not about anything. I'm just, you know, they're people will judge for themselves who's the cooler of the two of us.
It's not about being cool. It's about sharing what you love. Don't tell me what to love, Aaron Myers.
All right. I'll just tell you what to think.
Okay. Anything else going on this week?
You know, it's been just constant celebrations.
Because I left or because it was your birthday?
Well, you know, we didn't really put a label on why.
You miss me because I am the best babysitter ever.
It's true. I wish you could be here that... We could then come and go as we pleased.
Yep. Yep.
Unencumbered by little children.
Yeah. You can dream, man. But yeah, that's alas. All right.
No one to blame but myself.
Exactly.
That's all right. So, yeah, it was nice having you here.
That was so heartfelt.
I miss you.
No, don't. No, that's okay. Too much.
All right. Let's just, the past is what the past is, and now the future is now, and we should talk about comic books.
Okay. I read a lot of comics this week.
Well, let's just talk about a couple of them.
Okay, that's a good All plan.
Right. I mean, my favorite superhero team right now, probably Guardians of the Galaxy, but not the current run, the previous one with Bug, Cosmo, and Mantis. Thanks, Andrew Lionheart.
Our first book this week is Secret Avengers #7, written by Ale Scott, drawn by Michael Walsh. Colored by Matthew Wilson and lettered by Clayton Coles. Secret Avengers is published by Marvel Comics.
I'm not going to correct you because I gave you the pronunciation and you chose to ignore it. And so from here on out, that's what I'm just going to keep doing. And when people hear you say it wrong, they can just know in their heart of hearts that it's your fault, not mine.
That is my thing, and it's why people love me. Mm-hmm. It's why I'm beloved, for my quirks and my... eccentricities?
Yeah. Speaking of quirks, let's talk about this book. Here's what you need to know. Maria Hill is the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. Phil Coulson is, I guess he's kind of sort of AWOL. Like, he's ostensibly on vacation leave from his PTSD after fighting the Fury, but he's actually investigating some other stuff that we'll talk about in a bit. Nick Fury, meanwhile, is in a coma from some alien acid he found in Coulson's locker. Spider-Woman adopted a suicidal sentient bomb named Vladimir, who reminds me a lot of Marvin from Hitchhiker's Guide. That's how I hear his voice.
Mm-hmm.
Black Widow got sucked into a black hole, and Hawkeye is in Buenos Aires with Deadpool, who spends like half his issue arguing with the writer. It's very silly.
Silly? Is that the word you would use for it?
Mm. I don't know. It's not, I don't mean silly in like a judgy way. I just mean that it's, this book does not take itself seriously, and that is why it is notably different from most of the other Avengers titles.
It makes me physically angry.
Aw, why?
I hate this run of Secret Avengers more than I've almost hated any comic book ever.
Oh, you're adorable. I don't have as much anger about it. Actually, most recently, like the past couple of issues, because of the self-awareness. Like, if you recall, I have been pretty grumpy about Hawkeye being an idiot. Mm-hmm. I get very tired of that because I don't feel that it's particularly true to character, blah, blah, blah. I've talked about this a bunch. But the past couple of issues, that was not necessarily corrected, but sort of addressed in a tongue-in-cheek way that, like, I kind of appreciated.
God.
Like, there was a little nod to the fact that he's been written like a fucking loser and that it's an act. And while I don't love the act, at least it was acknowledged.
That's fine.
This part, though, the Deadpool stuff, man, can we talk about Deadpool?
Well, that's true to form, though. Like, Deadpool, the ongoing book, typically is very fourth wall breaking.
Oh, he's always been. That's not the problem that I have with Deadpool.
Yeah, there's two different Deadpools, though. There's solo book Deadpool, and then there's, you know, like, X-Force Deadpool. And that, you know, X-Force Deadpool's still kind of a silly, you know, whatever.
You mean character. Like Remender Deadpool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but that was still his character has always done things with like narrative structure that is different from everybody else.
Right, but it's not. I think it's, at least from what I can recall, the talking to the reader. You know, mm-hmm. the stepping outside of the comic stuff mm-hmm. typically has just been in the solo series. I am not a Deadpool expert because of that, too.
Neither am I. I've read a bunch of the older solo series. I'm surprisingly behind on the current one. But, you know, I've read a decent chunk of it. And I read the whole Uncanny X-Force run.
Uh-huh.
So, no, I'm not an expert. But I don't, like, I guess I don't have the same kind of anger about Deadpool that some people can conjure up, but I don't necessarily love him either. When he drops down into a book like this, though, there's a lot going on with irreverence and silliness in Secret Avengers right now. Like, they're like slap happy stuff that's happening with the various characters and the like the quippiness, and then you add Deadpool on top of that. It's just it's a lot. It's a lot of
here's the thing, like, a few at least caveats to this. Like, I understand my dislike of this book is somewhat irrational, and it has nothing to do with the quality of the writing, like the cleverness of the writing or the quality of like the art or anything like that.
Sure. You just hate comics.
No, I love comics, and that's why I hate this comic book.
You hate fun?
Maybe. I like fun where I expect fun, I guess. And I don't feel like this is the wrong book to be having this kind of fun.
But the entire restructuring of this book allows for it. I can't believe that I am defending this. but the way that Secret Avengers is presented now, like, it is the fun team book. There's not a lot of fun happening in any of the other Avengers titles, but there's some humor opportunity inherently available to these characters that we just don't like see other places. And whether Secret Avengers used to be like this or not is irrelevant.
No, but the problem is it is not really sticking to the rest of the Avengers continuity.
Oh, okay. Can we please talk about continuity?
Sure. It's important. It's important in Avengers. Avengers is the core series that is supposed to kind of help the rest of the Marvel Universe revolve around whatever's happening in it, at least in the Hickman era.
I really hope that everybody is taking note of the fact that I'm the one saying that continuity doesn't matter in this particular instance.
Oh, it matters big time to me. And I don't know, you have a brain tumor or something. Something's wrong with you today.
I don't know, man. I read like a shit ton of Avengers books in the past couple of days. And I'm feeling like it's actually super okay that this is different. That this gives us a chance to present a team in a way that is not so heavy-handed and is not so, like, everything is dying and the worst. And the repercussions are different, and therefore the character banter is different. And then it's not out of place to have somebody like Deadpool show up and start waxing poetic on the fact that we're all comic book characters. I'm not saying that it's necessarily all working perfectly. In fact, I'm super not saying that, because there's so much of that silliness on top of silliness happening that it's a little overwhelming. But I don't think that there's anything wrong with giving these characters a chance to kind of stretch out of the dire awfulness that has been happening in the, like, main titles.
I don't like it.
It's okay. You don't have to like it.
I think here's the problems that are tainted this series for me from the get-go.
Okay.
That just don't make it enjoyable going forward. Fine, you can retcon why Hawkeye is portrayed the way he's portrayed, you know, as the idiot. That's fine. You put in the explanation. It doesn't really change the past for me. And that version of Hawkeye didn't belong in the regular Marvel universe.
Oh, okay. Obviously, I don't disagree with you on this one.
Okay.
Maybe I'm slightly more forgiving, but I guess that kind of stuff happens.
I can't shake that the mandate from Marvel was Matt Fraction isn't writing for us anymore. People really liked Hawkeye. We want to do that with an Avengers book. And that's what this series is. Well, so it feels false for me.
What about what's happening in Avengers World? Because Hawkeye is one of the core teams in that book, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that his characterization there is kind of split between the way that he is portrayed in the main title, right, and in Secret Avengers.
That's fine. He's, you know, he's not flying around with his tongue sticking out or anything. But it's not to the point where it's a ridiculous characterization. Like, it doesn't have to be that, like, the best version. I have to, you know, love it or anything like that. But it's not so far afield that it's distracting.
So, for the record, you are the one who has hijacked this conversation about self-aware teams and made it all about Hawkeye, not me.
I don't think so. You kept bringing up Hawkeye.
Well, I mean, he's in all of these books, but he is, like, your mainstay for what the problem is so far.
No.
With this team.
You're fixating on the character, and I was fixating on the creators of a particular version of a character.
Which
character? That established a, I guess you could say, a model now.
Okay.
Right? You know, it's the Fraction's Hawkeye is this sort of writing model.
Yeah.
That was unique unto itself until Fraction stopped writing for Marvel.
Okay. Keep going with why this isn't working for you. Because I'm actually really interested.
Well, that's plenty. And it has nothing to do with what's going on in the Marvel Universe.
I'm trying to think of some other examples of books that I know you enjoy that don't have anything to do with what's going on in the Marvel Universe. Like, Daredevil's not really affected by what's happening on a larger scale.
Right, because that's a solo book. He's a street-level character.
Okay. What other exceptions? Captain Marvel, her solo title right now is completely unrelated to the bigger stuff that's happening.
Oh, of course it is.
But it's the opportunity of a solo book in comparison to a team book.
No, her book is spawning out of Inhumanity, so it's tied to that, at least initially, for this, you know, for these runs. We've established who the character is there, and it's still tying back into the whole Inhuman stuff.
Captain, not Ms. Captain Marvel, not Ms. Marvel.
Whatever. I can still make the same argument.
No, you actually can't.
Captain Marvel, I agree. They've pushed her out of what's going on in... I see what you mean.
Yeah, I, go,
Okay, fine. And if you really want to get into, Captain Marvel's fine. It seems it's very extraneous. Like, it's on the verge of me dropping it, too.
But there are always extra team books hanging out that give writers a chance to play around with characters in a way that's different from what's happening in the main titles. Why am I explaining this to you, Aaron Myers? You know this way more than I do. Look at Avengers Assemble.
It's not, well, that's canceled.
But as an example of something that was doing sort of what Secret Avengers is doing...
Sure. Also not a title I read.
So it's you. I mean, it's not comics. It's you.
I this isn't a defense of why people should read the book. I'm just telling you why I hate it. I already said it's well written. It looks great. I don't like it.
Is there an example of a lighthearted team book that you enjoy?
Like, current?
Yeah. Not necessarily Marvel.
Copra.
Okay.
Knights of the Dinner Table.
Okay.
I mean, there's plenty of books that are team-driven that aren't necessarily part of, like, a main... And I think because I'm so invested in what's going on in the bigger kind of scope of the Marvel Universe right now...
Because you're a Hickman fanboy?
Sure.
Okay.
Again, yep. This has nothing to do with me making an argument of why, like, this book should be, like, stripped from the shelves and burned in the streets or something.
Oh, because that's pretty harsh.
Well, they're your only options. You either have to read it or you have to, you know...
Burn it.
Yeah, burn it.
Right. Got it.
I'm just telling you what I don't like about it, and maybe it's rational, and it is probably not.
It's not.
Yeah, so I don't like
but
it.
But it's actually really interesting to hear you articulate it.
That's fine. I mean, some stuff just doesn't click with you. And for me, it's just not something that... It didn't win me over past my initial distaste for it.
It's cool. I'm not going to be the person to stand up and advocate for why this book is spectacular. But I have to admit that I actually don't hate it as much as I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that is worth pointing out.
I rarely hate a book. I'll kind of go like... Yeah, whatever.
So many strong words this week.
Yeah, I'll just go, not for me, or that's fine, you know, whatever. It's like, it's either something I love or something is just sort of just not going to be on my radar, but...
But again, I think that says more about you than the book.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe. I don't know, does it? Because if...
For sure, maybe.
I would say maybe not, because if most books are just sort of not... They're either just not part of my world if I don't like them. But this like one actually makes me angry. Like, then maybe that says something more about the book, right?
No. Dude, comics shouldn't make you angry.
I know. That's why this one makes me even that much more angry.
I think it's you.
Yeah, I think it's you.
No, I'm the good one.
Okay. Well,
I'm beloved.
I get one a year that can actually like go make me angry. Yes.
And this is it. This is the one you're picking.
Yep, and it's, again, like, I can't think of an Ailescott book that I don't like.
Hmm.
Like, I think he's a great writer and creator. So this isn't even a writing issue, necessarily, and the art looks great. I hate this book, man.
Can I ask you a ridiculous hypothetical question?
Sure.
If these were not your Avengers... If this was this same team with these same circumstances, but it wasn't Marvel's Avengers, would you enjoy it?
I probably wouldn't. It wouldn't. If it wasn't something like, let me kind of re-caveat that to where maybe something that was written 10 years ago and I just picked up back issues.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't something I'm actively kind of tied to. You know, that's like not like a current month-to-month following.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably enjoy it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Are you reading the Deadpool solo title still?
No. I don't like Deadpool. I don't like the fourth wall breaking stuff.
Why?
I don't want to be reminded that these are comic book characters and that I'm reading a comic book and they know we're in a comic book.
So did you just hate everything we read this week?
No, I love the next book.
Wow, I cannot wait to hear why it works in some cases and doesn't work in others. It's almost as if you're wildly inconsistent.
Maybe you're wildly inconsistent.
You want to talk about the next one?
Yeah, I love that book. Let's talk about it.
There's really only one answer for me. I'm sorry, I'm a dork. My team is the Dynamic Defenders. Yeah, they're second rate. Bunch of cheese balls, Doctor Strange, the Hulk, Nighthawk. Nighthawk, love Nighthawk. Valkyrie, the Red Guardian, Luke Cage. I just love the Steve Gerber run on Defenders especially. It was just all so weird. Bozos, we're all bozos. I can't say it's better than any comic ever, but I love it. And if there were like secretly 100 more issues of Steve Gerber and Sal Buscema's Defenders out there, I would be like so unbelievably happy. And the world would be such a better place. There would be no war. There'd be no anger. That you'd be allowed to have 280 characters on your Twitter. The world would be a better place. Thanks, Jason Sachs saying bye.
Our second book this week is The Multiversity Number 1, written by Grant Morrison, drawn by Ivan Rice, inked by Joe Prado, and colored by Nai Ruffino, and lettered by Todd Klein. The Multiversity is published by DC Comics.
Okay, if you think I'm going to be able to accurately summarize this book, you're bananas. But here goes nothing. Multiple heroes from multiple versions of multiple DC universes have been kidnapped and brought together to save Nix Utan, the last of the multiversal monitors, from, well, basically hell. Abject despair, ruin, anguish. It sounds pretty dire, no joke. But the heroes exist as comic book heroes to one another in their own universes, and the whole thing is framed with a direct address to a reader of the comic, as well as, you know, like the actual readers, like us. So like Secret Avengers, we have a self-aware system at work here.
Kind of.
Okay, tell me how it's different.
It's Grant Morrison.
That's not actually a reason.
That is absolutely a reason.
Okay, continue.
Grant Morrison writes these kind of books. I mean, not that this is a rehashing of stuff he does, but this is not outside of his style at all.
Okay.
So a part of that for me is like, yeah, that's a Grant Morrison book. Okay. You know, it could be... I can suspend belief with this still, that these characters are not in a comic book that we are reading and know that we are reading a comic book about them.
Okay.
Because of the complexity of the story, the whole point of this multiverses means you could have, and it is meta in that way, that you have a world that exists, story and a fiction from another, in another world. And that's the whole point.
Oh, I think it's a great construct.
Right. Absolutely. So it just really bends the fourth wall. Really bends it. It doesn't break it. It's not tearing it down to you know, the posts inside.
So closer to the Wrenchies than to Secret Avengers.
Yeah. Huh. Much different. Way different. Okay. Like mind bending different versus just groaning self awareness.
Okay. I accept that. I acknowledge the subtlety that you are describing.
It makes all the difference.
I would still... Yeah. No, and when it comes down to what you hate versus what you love, that difference is really important.
A thin line between love and hate.
I put them all in the same category.
Yeah, but that's because you lack subtlety.
Okay. I don't disagree with that.
Okay, good. I was expecting a different response.
No.
Are we just too tired to really have like good quips this week?
No, I'm fine. Okay. How are you? Are you tired?
Yeah, I just couldn't come up with anything earlier. I just gave you a Pee Wee Herman response. I mean, when in doubt, Pee Wee out. Maybe that's a bad phrase for this week.
That's not gonna touch
that
one.
That's what she said.
So. Tell me what else you feel about this book.
I don't know. It's only issue one. But I love multiple universes where they could be anything. Okay. I'm not as hardcore DC nerd, so I know pre-New 52, like, a lot of these 52 worlds are, somewhat defined. But I guess at this point, even though I know this story started being written before New 52, like, I think it was, like, 5 years in the process or something, I would say if you were a big DC continuity nerd and, like, there's some world that's described that isn't within DC continuity, I guess at this point, that continuity can be played with however it wants to be.
Okay, so I don't know anything about anything.
Well, the whole reason for New 52 and 52 being pervasive in DC is because there's 52, you know, parallel worlds.
Yeah. So, chill out with the mansplaining.
That wasn't mansplaining. It was just DC splaining.
Let me actually say what I don't know before you tell me something that I do.
Okay, we're about 30 minutes recording right now. I mean, maybe we'll just put some note, like link to the wikis or something of the stuff you don't know. Go ahead.
Do you think that a mastery of DC knowledge is necessary to enjoy this book, and therefore the lack of it is going to somehow take it away?
No. Because, I mean, everyone's familiar with the iconic characters of DC.
Right.
And these are just, it's just variations on that, or it's, you know, completely new characters, or characters like Captain Carrot is not a DC character that people know that much.
But were a bunch of the other characters already existing, like, have already appeared in other, I don't know how to say this in a way that.
Or their variations, you know, obviously like Aquawoman, you know who variations, that's supposed to be.
But are there any that aren't variations?
I believe so. And at the same time, like, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. No, it doesn't matter. But I'm still sort of curious. So like maybe you're not actually the person to talk to about
it. I don't, my DC, C-list and D-list character knowledge is not as, you know, it's not very deep.
Right.
So you can link to the wiki on that one too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is this a series or is this a miniseries?
I don't remember exactly, but it's a multi-part event. I don't know if it's like 12 issues or what. Just keep buying it. Keep reading it.
Yeah, I will. It's the first thing that I have felt excited about in DC for a while because I felt like I wasn't going to come at it with a complete disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, good. I'm glad you read it.
That's cool. Yeah. I bought it. It looks lovely. Everything is great.
I'm proud of you.
Mm-hmm. But I still think that it was more engaging for me because of the, like, self-aware framing device.
Yeah, that's weird.
Why? It doesn't happen very often. And I'm going to allow the difference that you described in terms of, like, just the goofiness that Deadpool's fourth wall breaking versus the, like, bending.
Mm-hmm.
That is a distinction. And I think that the bending is what makes it more sophisticated and therefore is what makes it, like, kind of an intriguing way to package this story that, for me, was already, like, super out there.
Yeah. I will not disagree with that, and that makes more sense to me.
Do you think that the reader will intersect with the story directly?
I hope not, because that takes it, that goes too far.
In your, I mean, like, Aaron's rules of fourth wall bending.
I guess it really depends.
Even though that's not actually the
because Morrison, it could be anything, but at the same time, the way he does these, you know, it's at a level of intelligence that that is just far different. It's just different. So it really just depends on the execution when it comes. This is more of how the creator does it versus more the rules of fourth wall breaking.
Got it. Which you hate.
Yes. I mean, you know, there's always the Morrison exception.
Do you hate it in theater also? Oh,
yeah, of course.
So if there is direct address of the audience or if the actors are coming through the house to get on and off stage, that's something that you are not a fan of?
If they're... Yeah.
I'm just curious. Like, where is your complex coming from?
Number one, I don't really like, you know, the theater or the arts. I find it to be for the lower classes. No, I don't know. For that kind of stuff, it really, that's also dependent. It depends on what the conceit of the play is.
Okay.
But probably not my favorite thing. It's the same reason I don't watch, like, DVD extras for movies. I don't want to see how the movie was made.
I forgot that about you.
But I still like talking to comics creators.
You are wildly inconsistent.
I'm just who I am. I'm just a man. Trying to read some comics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a man on a podcast trying to read some comics.
Yep.
Wanting to talk to Farrell Dalrymple.
That was a good conversation.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good one. Stop breaking the fourth wall of our interview schedule.
At this point, there is no hiding it.
We are the Deadpool of podcasts.
Oh, no, no. No, I don't accept that. You just
ruined everything. Are we the Grant Morrison of podcasts?
No.
Somewhere in between?
That's quite a scale that you just created there. And I feel like if we can find that happy medium between the two, that...
Are we the Milo Manara of podcasts?
You're just going to keep picking those hot topics from this week, aren't you?
Just alluding to them. Not breaking the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm.
Just bending it.
I'm so proud of you for learning this new concept and now using it and overusing
it. Like a 3-year-old.
Yep.
Great. Well, let's talk to somebody who's much smarter than us.
Yeah. Good call.
From childhood, my favorite team has always been the X-Men. Amazing characters, talented writers, and artists working on the book. But really, I was reeled in by the social commentary. Even growing up, I recognized that mutant stuff reflected much in our society. Still, does mean a lot today, sadly. Josh Cruz, at Josh Cruz, really.
This week on The Couch, we welcome artist and writer Farrell Dalrymple. He's known for his creator-owned work like the Eisner-nominated It Will All Hurt, published by Study Group Comics, and Pop Gun War, published by Dark Horse Comics. He also drew Omega the Unknown for Marvel Comics. In 2013, Delusional, a collection of comics and sketches, was published by Ad House Books. His newest work, the graphic novel The Wrenchies, was published this summer by First Second. Thanks for talking with us today, Farrell.
Oh yeah, thanks for having me.
So The Wrenchies is huge. It's about 300 pages of hand-drawn, painted, and lettered story. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later, obviously. But now that that's finished and published and available to readers, what are you focused on these days? Any upcoming projects you can tell us about for the rest of 2014 or early 2015?
Yeah, I did a, kind of while I was working on The Wrenchies, I did a, I didn't do the whole thing, I didn't write it, I drew a young adult story, like about 61 pages, called Pale Fire. And the writer of that is M.K. Reed. And that's going to be coming out from Secret Acres sometime in 2015. I'm not exactly sure, but I'm done with that. And then I'm just kind of working right now. I just finished 3 pages for Captain Victory, which is like Casey's reboot for Dynamite. Yeah, it was just 3 pages, but it took me too long probably. But yeah, I just finished those. And I'm working on a thing for Dark Horse Presents with a writer, Chris Evans, called The Ear Farmer, which is like a science fiction love story. And I only have 8 pages of that done, but once I get some more, we're going to start running it in BHP. And great. Then I'm also going to be working on this Popcorn War sequel that I have a bunch done on it. I'm just going to be using the rest of the year to hopefully finish it.
That's great.
And that's going to run in the Brandon Graham's new anthology from Image called Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to start in the 3rd issue of that. So it might not actually come out until next year. So probably won't come out until next year sometime.
Going back to that, the piece in Dark Horse Presents, is that slated to be kind of multi-chapter, but always in Dark Horse Presents, like a couple different little episodes of it throughout?
Yeah,
okay.
That it was anyway. The way it was pitched to me or told to me by the writer was that it was going to be in 8-page installments.
Okay.
Running for I guess however long that they wanted to do it.
Cool.
But a year, I guess it would have been if I do 8 pages a month, it'll come out to be a year. So I don't know if it's like 90 pages or something like that. So yeah, it'll be around that page count, and I think we are going to collect it once it's done. But yeah, it's going to run in 8-page. Installments in that anthology.
That's pretty typical for Dark Horse Presents. They do like the first 3 issues broken up into, you know, throughout Dark Horse Presents, and they collect them into a, you know, a mini series.
Right. So yeah.
So you're busy, I think, is the short answer.
Yeah, and I'm also supposed to be, you mentioned it, Walhurt, I'm also supposed to be finishing that up too, but I had to take a break just because so overwhelmed with the Wrenchies coming out and doing all the promotional stuff. And that's why those three Captain Victory pages took me a couple weeks to do.
And I think it's good to just to mention for people, It Will All Hurt is on the study group website, you know, what's done up to this point. So if people want to get a feel for what it is before, you know, they track down print copies, they can read it on the web too.
Yeah, that's all for free on the web. And there's a bunch of other comics on there by a bunch of other great cartoonists too. That's a great site.
It is. I can't recommend people going to study group comics daily enough. There's a ton of stuff on there.
Well, speaking of collections of really great stuff, you were one of the founding members of the Meat House Collective in New York. I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about, like, what's the appeal of banding together, like, even in a loose way, with other alternative comics creators? What was the initial kind of push for that?
Well, the Meat House thing in particular, I think I was just, like, at that, like, I was in my mid-20s, and I had been working, you know, some different jobs that I wasn't too crazy about. So, like, going back to art school or going to art school, that kind of, like, late in life, it was, I don't know, it was, like, really impressionable or something. Like, it seemed really exciting to be around all these other people, you know, making cool art and stuff. So it was basically just, like, I was just, like, impressed by all the people that were around me and inspired by them. So it just kind of seemed to make sense, you know, to draw together and, like, show each other our work and make this anthology and all that stuff. I feel like even though, like, I talk to those guys still and I'm, like, really inspired by their work still, like, I look at it, just kind of gotten less and less social over the years, I guess. but I mean, like, even when I moved here, I still drew with people a lot. There's so many cartoonists in Portland. You know, and I go to, like, coffee shops and stuff sometimes too, but I don't know, like, lately it's, like, really gotten really hard, like, harder and harder to see people. So I kind of moved a little further out from, like, the main action, so I'm kind of more of a homebody these days, and I don't really get out and see people.
But you do still have a connection back to the guys that you originally connected with in New York, but less of a professional, like, collaborative connection now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really do, like, collaborations with any of those guys, really, but I guess Brandon Graham, mm-hmm. he wrote the Prophet stuff, so right. We collaborated on that, but I mean, generally, it's just me, I don't know, every few months or so, like, emailing, like, Tomer or James or one of those guys, and or, like, you know, liking something on Facebook or whatever. Whatever, you know. I don't really talk on the phone too much with anybody or, you know.
Do you think that also represents kind of the way that your art has evolved as well?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like something kind of like I sort of had to do to get that project, the Wrenchies, finished,
mm-hmm.
you know, to sort of, like, isolate myself a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it seems like in general, like, I don't know, I feel like I'm a little older now, you know, I'm 42, so I feel like this kind of, like, sort of sense of desperation, like, I have to get these stories done. So it seems like the easiest way to do that is just not leave my house ever, you know.
Is there comfort in that isolation? Like, I mean, I'm trying not to project too much, but, like, I personally tend to hide out in my house more than I will venture out around people, you know. And even if it's not good for me, it's still kind of the natural place I'll go to. And the internet especially kind of gives you this false sense of connection, you know, even if you're not really, you know, talking to people or making that human connection, you know, going on Facebook or going on Twitter or something kind of fills that and makes it a little more acceptable in my own mind of, you know, isolation.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, even when I was a little kid, I spent most of my time by myself, my free time by myself, you know, mm-hmm. I wasn't being forced to go to school and things mm-hmm. like that. Yeah, I was just, like, really good at entertaining myself, I guess. And I guess now that I'm a grown up and have the power to do that, I tend to do that more and more. Yeah, and the internet, yeah, it's kind of a weird thing. Like, I feel a little, like, schizophrenic sometimes from all the different social media outlets and stuff, and the weird kind of pressure that the internet has, like, where I feel like every day, like, I wake up and I'm like, oh no, I'm behind on emails and getting back to people and
reblogging Tumblr posts. And
yeah, it's like, do I have a podcast interview today? Or
well, because it is tied to self-promotion too. You know, it's the social media double-edged sword of being an outlet to connect with either peers or friends, and then also to promote your work too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's weird. I don't know if I'm dealing with it in the best way, but you know, I'm trying. Trying to deal with the, you know, like, life seems to change up every few years, you know, as far as, like, that kind of stuff goes. I basically live in, like, the suburbs right now, which is strange. Like, I didn't think that I would be doing that, I guess. My life, like, I think that ideally I would probably like to just, like, live out in the woods somewhere, just, like, completely isolated. I mean, that's such, like, a nice romantic quality to it. But, I mean, who knows? Yeah, maybe that wouldn't be super healthy for my, you know, my mental state or something.
Well, I'm kind of curious. Is that something that growing isolation, like, you know, wanting to move out to the woods, like being in the suburbs now, but maybe, you know, having lived in dense urban areas younger, you know, is that kind of continued separation from society? Like, even if you were an introverted person as a young person, did you find when you were younger that it was, you were still more connected to, like, the, you know, the electricity of the city?
Well, definitely, like, in my 20s and, you know, somewhat in my 30s, I was, like, I remember when I first moved to New York, like, I moved from Oklahoma, and it was a little scary, you know, I didn't know anyone there, and it was kind of a different city then, too, like, I was sort of, like, on the, like 1996, I think. So it's kind of on the tail end of, like, the city being kind of, like, cleaned up a little bit, I guess. You know? Some of the, you know, more scarier crime elements being pushed out of Manhattan or whatever, gentrified or stuff. But I remember, like, being really excited and realizing that it was, like, the first time I'd been, was in a place where people would get, like, my movie references and things like that. So, I mean, that was, like, really exhilarating for me, you know. Like, I liked that aspect of it. And it wasn't, I lived there 8 years, and, I, like, kind of by the end, like, last couple of years, I was ready to go, like, really ready to not be in that kind of intense, it was really exhausting. Like, I don't know how else to put it. It was, like, I felt like I wasn't strong enough to survive there or something.
Did you pick Portland because of the comics community there?
No, I had a friend who lived here, and I visited Portland while I lived in New York, and I really liked it a lot. And then after I moved out of New York, I did a little bit of traveling in Europe, and then I went back to Oklahoma, to Tulsa, and lived there for a couple of years. And I, you know, spent time with my family and stuff. And then I didn't want to live there. It was a little too, at the time anyway, it seemed a little too culturally bereft. You know, I kind of wanted there to be more like a music scene and art scene and stuff like that, I guess. And just from having visited Portland before and having a couple of friends there, I was just like, oh, that seems like a good place to go. So I moved here. And it was, yeah, then I realized, like, I knew Craig Thompson lived here, but that was about it, you know. I was like, oh, yeah, Craig Thompson and Dark Horse. And
I wasn't, as it really turns out, like, everybody else lives there, too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it was weird. I was just like, oh, my God, this person, you know. But, yeah, it has this whole, like, history of comics being part of this town that I wasn't aware of. So.
Well, and you were probably starting at that, kind of the first exodus, too, to Portland of comics creators. Like, even though Portland, it has a long history of, you know, being a comics town, I'd say in the last decade or so, it's become sort of this mecca, too.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I remember when I first moved here, it's like 7 or 8 years ago, something like that. And it was, yeah, I think I ran into Brett Warnock from Top Shelf, and he's like, "You moved here? Everyone's moving here." And I was like, "Really?" And then, like, over the years, yeah, I was like, "Oh my God, yeah, everyone is moving here." It's I've seen this town like really blown up, especially in the last couple of years. Not just cartoonist. I mean, it's, I don't know. It seems like it's gotten really, the word's out that this is like a good place to live.
Does that help you get out of the house? Like having other people from your, you know, your industry around who may be more inclined to be like social friends rather than people that you're working directly with, but you still have that common denominator to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the only time I go anywhere. I mean, unless I'm hanging out with my girlfriend or like yesterday I was kind of a rare outing where I went to a show, like a daytime rock show at a bar. And that was weird because I just was like, yeah, I wasn't used to being around people. And I was just like, oh, this is like a little too intense for me.
I mean, it was a good show. And everyone knows the best rock shows are during the day.
Yeah, it was free. You know, like friends were playing. So it was fun. But generally, the only time I go out is like, oh, someone's having a book. There's always like book releases. And
right.
I mean, there's like you know, studios in town full of cartoonists. And it seems like someone in one of the studios is having any given month, there's like, yeah, they're releasing some new book or something. So I'll go out to those, or if there's some kind of like a local show happening or something, like I'll do that. And usually go to like the parties around those things.
That's good. That's good. That sounds like a healthy balance. I'm always concerned, yeah, I mean, when we hear, you know, about all of you guys just sitting at home and drawing and like intentionally isolating yourselves. I always wonder how long till you just, you know, snap and stop making books. And obviously my concern is selfish, so.
Well, talking about comics, let's talk a little more about small press and alternative comics. It's been really interesting as we talk to various creators who really found their niche outside of mainstream comics. Some have always been on the outside and gladly, and others kind of settled there over time. Like, what's your personal comics philosophy at this point in your career? What are you working towards, and where are you most comfortable working?
Well, I guess the thing I feel like I've been saying this a lot lately, but the past few years anyway, I just want to be a comic book author, you know, whether you, I don't know, you consider that like a graphic novelist or cartoonist or whatever. I don't know, I think because like I enjoy drawing, like the act of drawing, that I've been kind of lucky to work with some like really awesome writers over the years. But I think that once the Ear Farmer stuff's done, I mean, nothing against Chris, like I love him and he's a really good writer and I enjoy working on it and everything. But I'd like that to be like the last time I draw something else for somebody, for somebody else. Like I just, you know, I kind of want to just make like my little silly ideas happen. It's taken me a while to figure it out, you know, this whole like career thing. But like when I first started, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Like I was just like, oh, I guess I should be an illustrator or something like that. But I was always like making my own comics for myself, you know, just to do them. And I just thought like, okay, that's how you become like successful as a cartoonist or something, is to do illustrations or draw Spider-Man or whatever.
Right.
But, now it's just like kind of knowing how long it actually takes me to get anything done. Like anytime I feel like I'm working, like doing something for someone else, like to make their vision happen, I kind of sort of resent it, you know, just from like the time I feel like it's eating up from taking away from my own little universe that I want to build.
Yeah. But is there, it seems like now you're also at the point where you're established enough to make a living at it too. It seems like that's not always an option when you're first starting out, that you have to take the work for hire because you need money.
Exactly. Yeah. That was the thing. It was like partly just like a lack of vision on my part. Like I think if I had been a little more confident or a little secure in my own knowledge of like what I wanted out of life, I would have probably just have kept doing Popkin Wars, like a regular series or something. But yeah, trying to make that pay for itself back then. Like, I didn't have any kind of knowledge or idea of like the book market or any of that stuff. Like, I not like I'm an expert now, but I definitely have a better idea of how I can make that happen.
When you're first starting out too, to be able to see other people's mistakes and learn from them, like by working for them and not having to do it yourself.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely things that I took from, I don't know if you made any mistakes, but like working with like a writer like Jonathan Lethem was like really cool for me just to get, I mean, I was a fan of that guy already, you know, so it was neat to like get, you know, and I definitely learned a lot about, you know, writing just from, yeah, like reading his script.
Sure. Okay. You know. Yeah, right. You almost get to kind of cheat by looking at people you admire and how they execute their work, right? You get that kind of secret peek behind the curtain.
Totally, yeah.
Do you think, though, that doing your own stuff means that you are always going to be in the, like, small press or alternative category?
I hope not. I mean, I hope Wrenchies has been, I mean, nothing against small, I mean, I love small press. Like, I would, for, I mean, like, I guess if, like, I wasn't, if I was better at knowing how to, like, have, like, a distribution system,
mm-hmm.
I would probably self-publish, you know, just because, like, I like doing that so much, and I like mm-hmm. people that do that, and that's generally the things that I'm drawn more towards, too, or, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, handcrafted, you know, limited edition kind of stuff.
Sure.
But I mean, like, I feel like First Second is, like, even though they're not, like, Marvel or DC or whatever, they have this really amazing distribution system where they get their books in libraries and, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, legit bookstores and stuff, and not necessarily just comic book stores, which I'm not talking trash about comic book stores. I love my comic book stores. But it seemed like they had kind of, like, a different sort of market that was available to the kind of stories that I wanted to tell,
mm-hmm.
and that was important to me. Because, like, I remember when, like, starting out, I was really frustrated by, and it might have just been because the market was different. It, you know, I don't think it was anyone at Dark Horse's fault necessarily, but I didn't really know how to promote myself, or, I mean, the internet wasn't as prolific, I guess, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
As it is now, too. And I remember here, you know, getting emails from people and stuff. I'm like, hey, how do we get your books? They, you know, I can't find them anywhere. You know, it's like, what? Why isn't it in bookstores? You know, so it's like, I feel like with the hopefully doing my own work from now on, that won't be as much of an issue, I guess,
mm-hmm.
being like independent or mainstream or whatever. Like, I'm kind of feel like, even though like Image Comics is like an independent company, it's, you know, they have like a fairly mainstream kind of audience or distribution, you know,
mm-hmm.
I guess depending on the title, but
certainly.
I mean, Walking Dead probably outsells anything Marvel or DC does or something, you know, I mean, I don't know the numbers. I'm just pulling stuff out of the air here. But
certainly in trades it does, but I think that your comparison is accurate. And I guess that was kind of going to be the next place I pushed you, because the way that you did the Wrenchies is in one giant chunk. And
yeah,
and then it's published like a book. And First Second, you know, they're awesome. The quality is fantastic, and the distribution is obviously a great advantage for you. But so I was curious if there was an interest to just change the medium slightly, or change the distribution slightly with a company like Image, which would still give you the benefit of assisting with the distribution, but quite a bit of the promotion still has to come from you. But I think ultimately it kind of changes your work pattern pretty significantly, because then you would be looking at something like monthly or whatever, as opposed to in one giant 300-page chunk, no big deal, like the Wrenchies was.
Uh-huh.
So is that, I mean, do you have an interest in that kind of storytelling? But, like, you're doing that online anyway, so I guess.
Yeah, I've actually thought a lot about that. I mean, I think about it all the time, kind of like how I want my stuff presented to the world. Like, if it were up to me, like, about halfway through the Wrenchies, I would have started serializing it, like, online, or, you know, just putting out little self-published books. But like my contract that I had with them didn't really allow for that.
Certainly.
You know? And I was also so busy trying to finish the book that I wasn't, you know, I wasn't pursuing it too hard, like that avenue too hard. But I, you know, there's part of me that I would love to, I wish I could do it, just like a regular monthly book or something. But I'm thinking like after, because Popcorn War is going to be serialized in this anthology, but it's going to be done in like 50-page chunks.
Okay.
So it's going to be like a big, like kind of heavy metal style magazine where they'll have like, I think like one long section and then a bunch of like, you know, backup stories and things like that. At least that's how I was, it seemed like it was presented to me. I don't, I'm, like I said, I'm in the third issue, but I think they're, yeah, I don't know if they've had all the stuff collected for the first and second issue yet even. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of one way of doing it, I guess, but it's still, it's like me working on this thing in isolation for like a long period of time.
Right.
So I might start putting that online as well on the study group site at some point, like maybe once the first issue comes out. I still have to talk to Brandon about it and stuff. I think he would be okay with it. I do, after I'm done with the Popcorn War stuff and the Ear Farm stuff, I have an idea for basically a Wrenchy sequel. Oh. And I would really like to be able to serialize that first. So I think, you know, when I start talking for a second about actually, you know, laying out the contract or whatever, if they want to do it, I don't even know if they'll want to publish it. We'll see. I'm not, I would like to be able to serialize it somehow, whether in print or on the web or both.
That makes me really curious about your storytelling process, because the Wrenchies is so circuitous in the way that, like, I feel like we have access to this kind of stream of consciousness storytelling directly, like, downloaded from your brain. So it's hard for me not to just picture you sitting down, like, do-do-do, one page at a time, and poof, that's, like, how the whole thing comes out. So how accurate or totally not accurate is that? Do you storyboard or outline? Like, is there a structured part of your process that can kind of scaffold up how loose the finished work comes across?
Yeah, I mean, my process changes all the time. Like, even in the while doing the Wrenchies, I was like changing little minor things up, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But like, It Will All Hurts, I would call that stream of consciousness, at least like the first few chapters were, because that was just straight me drawing something on, you know, on paper with a pen, no pencils, and I wasn't thinking too far about what was going to happen next. You know, maybe like panel to panel or like a couple panels ahead, but I mean, it wasn't. I didn't have any kind of like overarching thing, you know, themes or anything, like any kind of thing I wanted to tie up or any of that stuff. And then kind of towards the end, I actually did start to plan stuff out more. Now that I have like only like a chapter and a half left on that, I've written a bunch of stuff down. But with the Wrenchies, that was all very planned out, you know, meticulously gone over. And like I gave for a second a pretty loose plot. I think it was just like 3 pages of writing, and I had about 15 drawings or so that I gave to them that were just kind of like little promotional stuff that I think I actually ended up using most of it in the story, like actually in the pages of the book. But with that, I would do I had this thing all written out, and I had tons of notes for it in a file that I kind of would like organize and try to put in some kind of sequential order. And then I would thumbnail maybe like about 30 pages or so at a time. I had a lot of like challenges making things fit into the chapter, like going to add stuff. And it actually kind of, the book doubled in size by the time I was done.
Oh, wow.
And I left a lot of stuff out too. Let's, you know, go in the sequel, hopefully. I would do like all these like thumbnails, and then I would, you know, pencil them all, and then get them, you know, just to the point I liked the pencils, and then I would ink them mostly with a brush. There's some pen stuff in there, and then watercolor them and scan them and clean them up, and that was it. But it was all planned out. The Wrenchies, it wasn't. I don't think I mean, it, I know the story is kind of all over the place and a lot of people are probably having trouble like deciphering it, but it all makes sense to me.
No, it definitely makes sense. It's just it's not a linear story.
No, yeah, you're right.
So sure. So I guess my question was, did you, and you sort of addressed that, did you write it in a linear way and then jumble it all up, or did you just kind of sit down and start writing, which you obviously did not? I think that it is, it's just a it is a different way than sitting down and writing point A to point B, and then from point B yeah. way to go to point C. And I find that to be like really sort of interesting, since you're doing all of it simultaneously. Like you're.
Yeah, it's well, I mean, even with writing, I mean, I've never written prose, you know, other than like little weird things for myself, but. It seems from what I've heard of just like, you know, prose writers, especially when you're dealing with stuff like, you know, long histories of people and stuff, that there is like a lot of like, yeah, planning and like timelines and stuff like that. I mean, unless you're just like a genius and can just like, okay, I'm just going to write this thing now and go to town. With me, yeah, I had a lot of like, stuff on the wall, you know, like little notes mm-hmm. about like what I wanted to have happen, and like there was a lot of like problem solving in the kind of in the more like thumbnail stage of like how to make things fit together.
Gotcha.
And it's, you know, I'm dealing with like time, kind of weird time travel elements too, so it would get really confusing for me too. So yeah, I kind of had to do this like long timeline that I actually thought about putting in the Wrenchies. I might do it in the sequel, but yeah, there's like a big timeline of like where everyone fits, mm-hmm. like, you know, who everyone is, their future selves, their past selves, and all that kind of stuff.
can I ask, it's a little hard for me to articulate this, but a theme, and I don't think this is anything you haven't probably talked about in the past, but a theme of a lot of your creator-owned work, it features children, you know, and mm-hmm. I think these stories, you know, the Wrenchies or Iwala Hurt are kind of explorations of your own childhood too. And it, how, when you're doing these works, how personal do you get? Like, how much of this is a catharsis, you know, is a kind of a personal therapy in a way, and how much of it is just pure fiction?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to, like, I mean, obviously there's some things that are complete fiction.
You know? Sure.
Dealing with, like, magic. That's reassuring, so thanks.
But, well, can I tell you how my reading of that is, though? And having small children, I almost think in a child's mind, there isn't much difference between reality and that and the fantastical. Mm-hmm. You know, like what a grown-up might perceive as a child's experience could to the child could be one of these stories, you know, yeah, metaphorically, it just because the reality isn't quite gelled yet when you're a child.
Sure. Like, I mean, everything is so weird to you as a kid anyway, you know, because right. everything's new, you know, it's just like, I remember like being a little kid and going on like field trips and I'm like, how did I get here? Like, where are we? Like, what is this place? We're at a bread factory. What's going on? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, there's that aspect for sure. And I mean, a lot of that stuff is, I don't know, you know, metaphors in a way, you know, things, you know, like killing demons and stuff. There's a lot of like personal stuff in there too, like, you know, autobiographical thing elements that I try to put in my work. I know Brandon Graham's fond of quoting Hemingway saying like, start with something true. Mm-hmm. And I try to think about that when I'm making comics, because it's so easy for me just to get completely lost in like a fantasy that I like having those kind of like, even if someone doesn't know what they're reading, like if they're reading something autobiographical, it's like having that in there gives it a weight. I feel like gives a story of like a connection mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, yeah, I don't necessarily know if it was cathartic, but it was a really emotional experience for me, especially towards the end, like the last but you know, dealing with such dark subject matter too, that yeah, I mean, that was, it was rough. It was a rough go of things, like kind of took its toll on my, like, you know, relationship and things like that. But you know, I got through it. Okay.
from beginning to end, what that, maybe that is difficult to actually determine if you've been sort of playing around with this idea for a while, but let's say from first pen on paper to last bit turned in, how long did you spend on the wrenchies?
5 years.
Okay.
Like, within that, yeah, it was, there was a lot of bill paying work. And, you know, like I said, I did that young adult story, mm-hmm. kind of in the midst of that, mm-hmm. too, you know. So I was working on other stuff, illustrations. And I mean, like, when I say, you know, people ask, like, how long does it take you to do a page? You know, it's kind of hard to quantify that, because right. it's, you know, there's stuff that I have to do all day long, like answering emails or paying bills or mowing my lawn or whatever, you know. So it's, yeah, you know, I say 5 years, and just like, yeah, that's the length of time, I think, when I actually started drawing the first page, and when I like sent it off to first second to be printed, about that long. You know, I did some prelim stuff before that, and I've been working ever since on like promoting it and doing other little things.
Sure.
Like, I did like a 10-page wrenchies side story for tour.com. Just put up recently.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, all that stuff takes time.
But that's quite a long emotional journey too, especially if it's a heavy story for you, to have that kind of always churning in the background, even while working on another work, you know, over that 5 years. Is it sort of like a big weight lifted off your shoulders when that final page is drawn?
Oh yeah, man, that was, felt so good. Yeah, I was trying throughout the whole thing to not let myself go too crazy about the pressure. Like, I had a couple breakdowns, you know. not on the internet, thank God, but you know, I mean, yeah, it was hard. There were certain chapters that were easier for me. Like the Hollis chapter was really easy. I did that pretty fast too, and comparatively fast. And like, I remember actually meeting with my agent once a week while I was living in this area in Portland called St. John's, and she would come up there and we'd meet up and go over the pages and stuff. And I was like, wow, this is legit now. I'm doing this, you know, doing this every day. And then like at the next chapter after that, it was like, oh boy, kind of got back to being a little harder. But reading that chapter now is weird. Like, I've read it a few times in front of people. It's like, you know, like a presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So like I picked that chapter because it's like my favorite one. But like getting through that is really hard, just to not like start bawling. Not like I'm like you know, like I'm, I feel like sad or anything, but I don't know, there's something, I don't know if it was because it was so easy, because it was so personal to me that it was that easy, but like, you know, making it, but like reading that isn't easy. Whereas like some of the other stuff in the story might be, you know, a little easier for me because it's a little more like fantastic or something.
Sure.
But like, I don't know, something about that is like, yeah, that is kind of like a little rough. You know?
It makes sense if it would come easier to get it out because of that kind of cathartic translation. But then to actually like expose that to other people, like, puts you back in a very vulnerable position. I'm not trying to project, so it's possible that I am without even realizing it, but damn, that makes complete fucking sense to me. that would be both the easiest experience and then the hardest one to kind of publicly experience, like, over and over again.
Yeah.
I guess I have a quick flip side follow-up then. When that last page is turned in and the story is done, do you miss it too?
I wouldn't say I missed it. I mean, The last few weeks of work on it were basically just production stuff on my end, you know, like getting pages ready to send off. And so I got to read it and reread it and stuff like that. And
is that sort of that like, closure experience then?
Yeah. And then I went like right after I sent it, I I went to the Small Press Expo last year. It was like last year at this time. And so then it was just like, oh, party, I'm here with all these people. And I had like a new book come out then too. So it was like, I didn't really like think about missing it. And I guess I haven't really, I feel like I've just still been working on it. So without kind of like the pressure of like, oh my God, I got to finish this book. Like I still am, you know, I see it every day, you know? So it was kind of like,
now like it's, oh my God, you have book, to promote this book. It's just a different kind of work. Yeah.
Like when I first got the book like that and I had it in my hands, like the physical copy, I think that was like the moment where I was just like, okay, I'm done with this now. Like this is done. You know, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see, I was just curious because it's such a long process of having, you know, that first page drawn to having the printed, you know, book in your hand to where it's such a part of your life.
Yeah, especially with the first second where like I finished the book, yeah, like I said, like last year, and yeah, it was just like a couple months ago where I actually had the book in my hand, you know. Right. So it's like they normally have like a year lead time from when like the book's done to when it's actually published.
And that's not so that uncommon, it seems like, for several publishers to kind of do that. I know Oni kind of has a similar process too, to where, you know, they kind of let it gel and it goes through a whole process before it gets released. So like when we had talked to the writers of Downset Fight, like they had finished it a whole year before the print came out, and it's almost like you have this big stretch before, you know, people start seeing it and gets this resurgence where your life has kind of moved on a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's a weird thing, is like I imagine that it would have, like when because I knew that going into it, and so I'm like, what am I gonna do? Just like, I mean, I figured I'd be working on other stuff, but like I'm just gonna be like sitting there waiting for it to be out. But like I feel like there's been so much things that have, you know, like part of first second, you know, they have a publicist who's been great. She's been working with me a lot, and she's been giving me like a lot of stuff to do, and like been working with her doing other, like that tour story for example and stuff. So I haven't really had, I didn't really feel the anxiousness, you know, about it. And then I got it kind of earlier than I thought it was going to be in my hands anyway, so it's like, oh yeah, that I just finished that not too long ago.
Maybe it's calculating by them so you don't get antsy and you're not sitting there stewing on when, you know, when you're gonna have to resurgence with it or something.
Oh yeah, that would be a good planning of theirs.
Well, I mean, you're still talking very excitedly about the sequel as opposed to like, oh yeah, that was that other book that I did. So there's something to be said for like you're maintaining the enthusiasm.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, like with pretty much anything I've done that is like my own stuff, I still want it in print, you know.
Right.
Like I worked so long on you know, on that stuff, like, you know, Popcorn War I did like 14 years ago now or something like that, and like I'm still stoked about that book, like I still want people to buy it. You know, even though there's a couple things in there probably, you know, embarrassing or something, I guess, if I let myself think about it. But like I just I'm into this whole idea of like the long con, you know, like I want to like a library of books by the time I'm, you know, too old to draw anymore. So
no, I think Terry Moore said the same thing when we talked to him. It's having that legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing to want as a creator too.
I see it more as like a an addiction or a compulsion or something. You know, like I'm like addicted now to like making my own books. Cause like, I don't know, I mean, as far as legacy goes, like, I don't know how long, much longer humanity is going to be on this planet, you know?
Oh, that, you know, you that never opens know up what's going to happen. is that part of the wanting to move out to the woods? You're kind of becoming a doomsday prepper.
Yeah. I'm a total doom and gloomer. No, I don't think there's anything I could do to prepare.
Okay.
Care for it, really. I'm so lazy that like I'm not my girlfriend's a little better at that kind of stuff, but I'm not like a stockpiler or anything. I'm just kind of like I guess pessimistic about, you know, anything being around too much longer after I'm gone, you know.
So your desire then is to, when the nuclear fire comes, you just want to be burned surrounded by your books.
Yeah, like, put me at ground zero, exactly.
Okay.
Wow, you always know how to end this with like these dark, horrifying visions, Aaron. Thank you.
Uplifting, you know, as a writer, to be like, die in a funeral pyre of your own creation.
Yeah, and it's kind of fitting for the Wrenchies, you know, right? Subject matter. So
see, it's beautiful.
If you say so.
Well, talking about the end, I like to end by getting a sense of what people are reading and watching, whether it be for entertainment or inspiration. So, any great comics you want to call out? Movies, television, prose, rock bands. Anything people should be checking out right now?
Joe Keating just gave me a bunch of his copies of Shudder that he writes and Lila Del Duca draws.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed that. I also got another book that I'm really stoked about. Vile Decay, I think is the name of it. I'm so stoked about it. I can't remember the name of it, but I'm pretty sure that's it. And Malachi Ward is the artist.
Oh, yeah. I saw him putting up some stuff. That hasn't come out yet, though, has it? Or
I don't know. I got it at Floating World the other day when I had my release party. So it's like, those are the last couple things that I got that I'm pretty stoked about. I'm also rereading Multiple Warheads by Brandon Graham. And I'm reading a science fiction book called Counting Heads by David Marusek. That's pretty mind-blowing. Like, I have to read a little bit at a time because it's like so dense, you know. It takes me forever to read it, but yeah, it's pretty great book.
Do you prefer prose or I guess do you prefer reading rather than watching to decompress?
I'm kind of a watcher normally, as far as like if I want to just kind of space out and like relax.
Yeah.
I'll binge watch a bunch of TV shows.
Cool.
And stuff.
Okay.
Reading for me is like, it's kind of like I'm working. You know, like I enjoy comics a lot and I enjoy reading. It's for its own merits, but it's kind of like I feel like, okay, I got to make myself do this so I'll be a better person. You know, like I'll think I'll be smarter or something like that, but it's, you know, enriches my, I guess, vocabulary or something, or hopefully makes me a better writer by seeing what other people are doing and being inspired.
But if you need to shut your brain off, you'll just watch TV, which is perfectly acceptable.
Yeah. Oh, another series that I'm really excited about too is the Sunny books by Taiyo Matsumoto. That guy's one of my favorite guys. So I don't know if you've seen those, but there's three out from Viz.
Are they originally published in Japanese and then translated, or?
Yeah, it's a manga. I think he's finished it, or at least, you know, has a lot more in Japan. But there's three volumes, I think, that are available right now, and they're hardcover. They're beautiful productions. Some color pages, mostly black and white stories, but it's awesome series.
Sounds wonderful. Well, thank you, Farrell, for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
This has
been great talking to you guys.
Yeah, this has been wonderful. Well, and thanks to everyone for listening to another episode of Comics Therapy. Don't forget to pre-order your comics at your local comic shop or subscribe to them digitally. Show notes and other details are on our site, as always, comicstherapy.com. We'll talk to you next week. Want so much to give you this love.